A present reality in our technology-focused world is this. Have you ever noticed that autocorrect is not always your friend? I mean, it's supposed to be there to help, but I'm not sure that it always does. You're typing along, your thumbs hit something they didn't mean to, and suddenly you say something you never intended to say. And it can get you in trouble if someone reads it as if it is what you intended to say. And the closer it is to what could be true as a message, the worse it is. Typos are like that. So the worst of the typos are where they end up almost making sense. Here's ones that make sentences better or worse. References to a desert island, which actually would be more pleasant than a desert one. But I actually saw someone listed recently as possibly bleeding internationally, which I think would not be good. Then there's the churchy typos. They can be some of the worst ones. If you enjoy sinning with the choir, join us. A song fest was hell at the church basement on Wednesday. Danny Key can both affirm those things or deny them. We'll see. And if you haven't said cemetery instead of seminary yet, it will happen. And it will happen at possibly the worst moment where you did not want to say it. My favorite churchy typo is one that I see often. But I think it's actually a true typo, if there is such a thing. It's a mistake that's not a mistake, a typo that's not wrong. And I'll give you an example of a time that I saw it in print a few years ago, actually on a screen. It was May of 2018, leading up to the royal wedding of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle being held in May 19th, 2018 at St. George's Chapel in Windsor Castle. Here's a sentence from a CBS online news story that morning before the royal wedding where they were describing every detail that would lead up to it, right? We had to fill pages about this wedding. All the steps that Meghan Markle would take, including who would lead her and escort her up the aisle to be wed. And the article said this, her escort, I think we have a picture, her escort to the altar, however, will not walk with her all the way from outside of St. George's Chapel. Let's just stop there. Did you catch it? Do you see it? The typo that's not wrong, the word is altar. And that word, as written, means to be changed, to be transformed. It's not the word altar with an A-R, which is a place of worship where we meet with God. I see this all the time. In fact, any time in churches where we're supposed to write the word altar, A-L-T-A-R, I almost expect to see it. I look for it because it's my favorite typo. Why is that? I think it's proof that you can get it wrong and still get it right. Think about what was about to occur in Meghan Markle's life on May 19th, 2018. I mean, marriage is a big moment in anyone's life, but marriage to a prince, that may seem like a fairy tale transformation. I mean, Disney has certainly sold it over and over, but it also meant becoming a public figure so well known that her every move, every outfit, every step, every word in life would be scrutinized for the rest of her life. And if you believe the magazine covers and the entertainment news, it hasn't gone especially well at times for Harry and Meghan. But back when this statement was written, the day before this wedding, this woman's life was about to be altered. I think it's correct. Whomever she was before, she would not be the same after this moment. Everything about her daily life would not be the same. At this moment, marking this spot, she was going to the altar, and she was going to be altered. There was no way around it. Let's just take the marriage to a prince part out of the equation and talk about altars and what happens there. An altar, A-L-T-A-R, that's a place of encounter, a place to meet with God. And to truly meet with the living God is to be changed. You can't walk away the same. So an altar is actually a place where we are transformed. And to be altered, A-L-T-E-R, is to be transformed, forever changed. If you send your clothes off to be altered, they will come back changed. You planned on it. If you spent your summer somewhere that was so transforming that your life was altered, you were forever changed. And an altar is a place we come and are altered. Today's reading from Genesis takes us to a place where Abram found that both of these words could apply. Genesis chapter 12, it's one of my favorite passages. There's so much to preach out of this passage. I will have to limit myself to just part of it today. Blessed to be a blessing, an encounter with the living God, a promise of offspring. God calls Abram to leave his home, to leave his people, and to travel to a land, a land I'll show you. This idea that God would bless him, make him a great nation, it's a powerful promise, but it's a promise from an invisible God. This is not a tangible idol like the ones that Abram's culture would have been used to. Even the destination is intangible, right? Go to a land, I will show you. You can't enter that in your GPS. So when Abram travels down the road, when he arrives at Canaan, an incredible thing happens. The Lord appears to Abram. Did you get that? Appears. The invisible God shows up and meets with him. I wish I had video of that moment. I want to know what it was like. God met with him in person. Here's the part from Genesis 12. Abram traveled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Moreh at Shechem. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring, I will give this land." No longer this land. So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. Now, this has been an invisible God sending him off, calling him to an unknown destination. But this God shows up, appears, meets with. This is an incredible and transformational moment. And I can just imagine Abram looking around and thinking, what do I do now? How do I mark this moment in my life? How do I mark this spot? How do I make a place where we can remember what happened? This is not a society that's writing things down for one another, right? And so how are you going to tell the next generation this is it? This is the place. And so what does he do? He built an altar because he's been altered. And he stops and pauses and worships the Lord there. He makes an outward and visible sign of an invisible encounter with this living God. And the moment has passed, but the altar, it's going to remain. When God tells Abram, this is the spot, this is the land, it's been very vague before, but here we are, this is it. And confirms that he will give it to Abram's children, who, by the way, don't exist yet. That is also part of the amazing promise. Abram stops and he pitches a tent for himself, which is temporary, but what he builds for God there is permanent. It will stay. Of all the things he could have built there, a welcome center, a monument, a Buc-ee's, any of these things, he chooses to build an altar. It's almost like saying, I want more of this, God. I want to meet with you again and again and again. And an altar, we've said it, it's a place of encounter. This is Abram's way of saying, not just for himself, but for others, God shows up here. This is what we sometimes call a thin place, a place where heaven and earth connect. And when he moves on from this place, we find the next stop on his tour, Genesis 12, 8. From there on, he went on toward the hills east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there, what's he do now? He built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. This is getting to be a habit. The very next verse, he does it again. As Abram travels following God, he is staking out his territory through worship. He is marking the spaces in his life that are significant by worshiping, building altars, calling on the name of the Lord, leaving a physical mark, a visible sign that something invisible has happened. And it's got to be partially for his offspring, right? If you come across an altar in the desert, you've got to wonder, what happened here? Or here it is. Here's the place our ancestors told us about. This must be our land. But it's possibly also for himself. Like, did that just happen? I want to remember in a very physical way that God meets with me. It's a sign for others and a sign for himself. Our lives with God are marked by this rhythm of encounter and response, revelation and response, again and again. And God is the initiator. God comes first to us. We love because he first loved us. We encounter him. You've encountered him, or you would not be here right now. An encounter with God changes us. We're altered by our encounters with God. What are the ways you've encountered God? Where are the spaces? Where in your history are there pins in the map that God met you there? Were they alone? Were they in a small, intimate group? Were they in a crowd? Whatever they were, they're pretty unique to you and your experience with God, but I can guarantee that you walked away changed. Your heart, your mind, your actions. God acts, and then we respond because of an encounter. We try to find a way to make visible on the outside what is happening on the inside. We build some kind of altar. We make some kind of response to God. Often that happens in worship, what we've been doing here this morning. God has met us here and will meet us here. And what we do, our songs, our prayers, our sermons, are just showing up, our feet moving towards a space, our heads bowing, our hands raising, our coming to the table. These are responses. These are the ways that we outwardly say, yes, God, if you want to encounter me, I am here for it. I'm going to do something on the outside to mark the invisible God's showing up. So worship is a place where we build an altar of praise. God has come to us, and so we respond. Or sometimes, think about Abram's second altar. It doesn't say God appeared. It just says he built an altar and called on the name of the Lord. Do it again, God. I know you come to me. I know you come to us. How about here? How about this space? There are altars of worship and response that we also build in obedience to God, to callings we've heard from God, altars that look like ministry or preparation for ministry. At some point this semester, students, you're going to be reading along in Wesley or Odin or counseling theory or church history, and suddenly you are going to have an encounter with the living God. Stop. Don't keep reading. Worship. God is showing up in your reading faculty. I hope that one day this semester you're reading a paper from a student and one of those lines strikes you and God meets with you in that space. In some of the most unexpected places, you will encounter God in the cafeteria, in classrooms, in choir practice, on the floor playing with your kids, in late night conversations at Waffle House. Stop. Make a mark for your life. Drop a pin. God has met you there. The ministries you're going to build will be an altar you build to the Lord. You will declare you've met him, you've met with God, and as a result, you'll build a church community, a counseling practice, a relationship. You'll build a committee. You'll write books. You'll write articles. You'll write children's sermons. You'll have a conversation. All of these will be outward things that you build in response to what God is calling you to do now. And your life, like Abram's, will be a series of altars, pins in the map. I met with God, and here is what I built with God. And you will leave something behind that is visible because of the invisible encounters that you have with God. You can leave behind a series of altars in your life, like pins dropped encounters that you've had and people that you've met. God met me here and here and here, and I worshiped here and served here and built here and loved here. That rhythm of encounter and response, it's going to follow you throughout your ministry. One of the dangers of being human is our temptation to focus on the visible, to focus on the tangible. I look to it as the sign that is expected. The temptation to think the external is all that matters. See, you can build altars without ever having an encounter. You can have whole building projects in your life where you focus on the how without ever focusing on the whom. Without encounters with God, those external results may look the same as any other altar, but they are actually altars to ourselves. Spectacles that we use to draw attention to how good or holy or how great our grades or our ministries or accomplishments. And those counterfeits can be really good copies because no one will know but us that we're just building but not remembering to encounter. Don't forget that the story of Abram's altar comes one short chapter after the Tower of Babel. People can build for different purposes. They can celebrate building for different purposes. Stop and ask yourself, where is the Lord in this? Don't build without him. Focusing on those externals as a measure of success can get us into trouble very quickly. And without having realized it, we can slip into that mode of building something to make a name for ourselves. That's Genesis chapter 11. But when you get to 12, God is saying, I will make your name great. But it's really to lift up the name of the Lord, isn't it? During World War II, the war in the Pacific introduced Western civilization and technology to a lot of places that had never seen anything like it before. And in the Melanesian Islands in the South Pacific, they got really caught up into the drama of World War II just because of one thing: location. Location, location. You're supposed to say it three times, right? It's because those islands were an ideal location for both the Japanese and the Allied forces. Everybody wanted that territory. So different sides moved into different islands. They built bases and refueling stops for their air forces so that they would have a place to stop before taking off again. And the island peoples, I'm sure they didn't know what to think of all this technology they'd never seen before, all these people arriving. These people who came, the foreigners from the outside, they built docks and airstrips. And once these things were built, huge ships arrived. Things landed from the sky. They unloaded cargo, the likes of which people had never seen or experienced before. And when the war was over, the foreigners left and abandoned these places they had built. And that would be sort of the end of the story. We might not talk about it today, except years later, when anthropologists visited those places to reestablish contact, see what was happening there, they found something very curious. They found that the tribes who lived there had built their own makeshift docks at the edge of the water. They had cleared long strips of land and lined it with torches. They were walking around wearing uniforms that had been left there before. They were marching in formation, all the while looking up to the sky and out to the sea, thinking that if they built it, they would come. So their experience was of these external spaces. They were eventually called cargo cults and studied for this. They were imitating the outside of what they had seen done, hoping that the gifts from the sky and the sea would drop again. They lit fires down the long runways, looking up to see what would fall. And eventually the name cargo cult became a phrase that's used as something to mean falsely connecting an end to a means. Although it was related, was not the cause of what came after it. Any ministry, any church, any response can begin to insist on doing the outward because it was a blessing long ago. Something that's always been done. Let's set up the torches again. Never bothering to ask if God is still in it, if God is showing up. Maybe even holding events they've always held, never thinking, what was the purpose of those events in the past? Is God calling us to those now? And on a personal level, we can do this too. We can build our own little runways of faith for forgetting to pay attention to an encounter with God. We can forget that no matter what we build for God, it does not impress God. It's not our actions that cause him to show up. He's already here. We can't force God's hand of blessing. And God's not so focused on what we're building for him as our meeting with him, our encounter with him. I had a moment this summer where I was working on developing a pattern of spiritual disciplines. Do you do this over and over again? And I was pretty proud of myself for my consistency, which means I'd probably been doing it like 2 or 3 days in a row. It's not always my strong suit. I was working on this pattern of like scripture reading and then listening to an audio commentary on the passage I had just read. And I was thinking I was really growing in this spiritual passage, and when it was over, I would stop and I would check off a little box. Don't you love to check something off? On a chart that said I had done it, congratulating myself like I had just, you know, done some big spiritual feat. Just look at how spiritual I was being. But at the end of that audio commentary one day, the author invited the listeners to join in a prayer, and he said this, and it stopped me in my tracks. He said, "Take a moment to just sit with Jesus. Not the idea of him. Just sit with him. He's here. He wants to meet with you." I kid you not, I had to go back and replay that. It so deeply shocked me because I was doing all of these things forgetting to meet with Jesus. I played it again and again. I needed to hear that voice to say to me, "Just sit with Jesus, not the idea of him." To invite me to encounter, I began to tear up. I had skipped it. I had built the runway thinking I had done the work without ever asking if God was present. Seminary is going to give you all kinds of opportunities for outward actions. You'll be graded on a lot of things. There will be moments of discussion where you'll get to raise your hand and feel good about your contribution. And people will notice the visible. So you can't forget the invisible. You can't forget that this is a place of encounter and response, encounter and response. Not just this place, this is the Christian life. It doesn't matter what it looks like to other people on the outside. It doesn't matter if it's especially emotional or especially profound, if it's alone in a space or in the middle of an encounter of outpouring with thousands of people. Just sit with Jesus. He wants to meet you there. And these altars that we build, these external things, I mentioned Abram did it and his descendants could look at it. I want to share with you, just to close, one of my most prized possessions. This is a piece of slate. It has some holes in it. And this is a piece of the original roof of Estes Chapel. The chapel was built in the 50s, dedicated in 52, and then it was renovated in 2018, and I was here as the dean, and this was the original roof. It was leaking very badly. And they were throwing pieces of it off the edge and putting it in dumpsters and carting away, and I just said, "Can I have one of those? Just one." I just thought, you know, this altar, this place, imagine the prayers that ascended through this roof. Imagine the people who met with God here. Where are they now? What did God do with their lives? This rail in front of us, we come and kneel at it during communion. There are spots on this rail that historic things have happened and very personal things have happened. Sins have been forgiven. Tears have fallen and soaked into it. Callings have been received. People have been restored. Marriages have been saved. People have encountered God at this altar. Sometimes we don't have to start rebuilding. We just have to go to what's been built. This table. God knew we would need something tangible, visible, tasteable. He knew that we were very tangible people. So I want to invite you into a season of encounter and response. And I hope that season does not end. I hope it's permanent for you. But let it begin here. What prayers will ascend through this new roof? What callings and prayers will happen at this altar? What meetings with God will happen at this table? What will be visible because of your time at Asbury and the invisible things that have happened here? So I invite you to bow your heads, open your hands. This is a season to come to the altar, but it's also a season to be altered. Just sit with Jesus, not the idea of him, the real him. Take this time, this next song, these moments, as our table is set and the altar is prepared for us. Take this time for encounter.